be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Appreciate that at all. So I'm Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I've practiced in the Richmond community for over 30 years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, also issues pertaining to interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality. I like to discuss healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and hopefully a fulfilling life. Psychological issues are complex and they're also misunderstood. While all of us have things that are, you know, emotional in nature, problems, issues that are emotional in nature, we all have blind spots and we all get confused. We all have experienced sadness or depression, anxiety or panic, peer pressure. None of us get out of this life without experiencing loss, and the list goes on and on. And yet, as a society, we continuously underfund mental health programs. We have morally confused notions of how to make our pain go away, and we're quick to judge others for their behavior. I love to listen to the talking heads on television when they go on and on about why people do the things they do in the most angry of tones, and just the very next day, they're guilty of the same thing. We don't know how to look inward to make the decisions about how we are going to live our lives or how we affect other people. So on each week on Mental Health Matters, I introduce a topic, and I either speak about that topic from my own body of knowledge, or I go to a knowledgeable guest. And then I give you, the audience, an opportunity to ask questions or to weigh in on the subject. The number at which to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging onto WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. If you'd like to listen to my show or to get to my website, just go on to WRIR's website and click my show, and that'll get you into my website, and then you can get my email. But straight up, my email is yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Those are the letters U-R-mentalhealthmatters, all one word, @gmail.com. And then this show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of my past shows. And you can do that by subscribing to my podcast, which you can get to by getting to my website. Oh, it's all so interrelated. And I hope that you'll do that, because I love my podcast. I think that's like the coolest thing. So today, we are going to highlight the issues of adoption. And what's interesting is that I told you all last week that I wanted to do this show in honor of Adoption Month, but you see, I'm a little late because I just realized that. I just found out that Adoption Month was actually last month. So a month late, or just a few weeks late, nonetheless, certainly a very important topic. So this week, we're going to talk about adoption, and my guests are Teresa Burchett. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and she is the adoption coordinator at Jewish Family Services here in Richmond, Virginia. And Jessica Carthy, she is also an MSW and a licensed clinical social worker. Actually, Teresa is the administrator of the program and not a licensed clinical social worker. She's the adoption coordinator, and Jessica is the adoption social worker at Jewish Family Services, and I want to welcome you both to the program.
Thank you.
I'm really glad that you're here today. If you have questions for either Teresa or Jessica, please feel free to call at 649-9737, 649-9737. So let's get right to it. Adoption is an interesting topic. It's an interesting topic because I think people have very strong thoughts and very strong feelings about adoption. And I think people who don't really know much about adoption are the ones who wind up having very strong thoughts and very strong feelings about adoption. So it would be nice to really get an understanding. So we'll start out with, why do families adopt?
I'll take this. Families adopt for a number of different reasons. One of the biggest reasons is to expand their family. Some families adopt because they have a strong yearning to give back to the world, to the community. Some adopt from international countries, in order to help children that may not have opportunities available, as well as to expand their family and share the experience with the children they may already have.
So I'll ask this then, what kinds of families adopt?
I'll take this one. We have a lot of different types of families that adopt. We work with families that are adopting other family members. Those might be grandparents or step-parents that are then adopting a child that is within their family. We have older families, younger families, families from all socioeconomic backgrounds and different sorts of relationships, same-sex individual couples may look at it, single parents.
Do the laws in Virginia support same-sex couples adopting, or does one member of that couple have to adopt?
One member.
How do you go about helping them to get through that process, knowing there's another member of the couple?
It would be one individual adopting the child, and so we work with the person who is adopting that, but looking at the family and who will be all those that are involved in the child's life.
Okay. Okay. And so, okay, so then I ask you who adopts, and you say, you know, somebody to expand their family, to give back to the world. So I think that from my perspective, the people who I know wind up adopting often do that because they can't have their own kids. And a lot of times it's sort of on some level, and I'm not saying that I'm giving it this value. I'm just saying how it seems that they're doing it as a last resort. I can't have my own kids, so I want to have children. I want to be a parent. I'm going to adopt. And it's sort of like the final thing. I've tried this. I've tried that. Yeah, I can't do those things. I'm going to adopt. Do you find that that's true for some families?
It may be true for some families, but as we're working with the families through the adoption process, we need to be sure that they really understand the value of adoption and what it means, and it's a different way of expanding your family. We also, of course, want to make sure that they're in a good place in terms of their loss, whether it be infertility or in some cases, the loss of a child at birth. So we need to make sure that they're in a healthy place before they move forward and bring a child into their home and their environment.
So if a couple comes to you and it is the next thing they're looking, and you can tell they haven't sort of surmounted that loss, you would really encourage them to heal from that first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have the best interest of the child in mind, and it would be important for them to be in a good place as parents before they move forward with adoption.
How do you help them do that?
There's a lot of discussion and training that goes on when we're doing the home study, which is the approval process to adopt. And it would depend on the situation and the client. It's all it's different from family to family. And if we felt that they weren't in a position to move forward, we would talk to them about maybe seeking out counseling or...
Mm-hmm. You would even do that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Other means to heal from their loss.
You know, I'm glad to hear that. I really am. I was thinking that in my business, because I treat so many people who have had some really tough childhoods, I've thought for a long time that that child study, that that family study, or getting permission to adopt sort of thing, might be useful for all parents. You know, sort of like, you can't have a baby until somebody gives you some ideas about what you're doing emotionally. But since I know that's not going to happen, I wonder, are there times where you go through the home study and turn a family down?
We have not had a family that we turned down, but we have had families where we've recommended that they have additional counseling, that we work with them on a different level, that they've gone to see a family therapist and further explore issues that really need to be addressed at that time. There are reasons we would turn a family down if they background checks came back and for some reason they had something that barred them from adopting a child.
What would bar them from adopting a child?
Murder, rape.
Those, never a good thing.
No, the big crimes, things like that, felony convictions.
Having a criminal record,
yes.
A felony criminal record. So if, let's say, 20 years ago they had a DUI, or that would not affect it?
That would not affect it. Not a felony conviction and misdemeanors would not prohibit someone from adopting.
So I guess that anything that was a sexual crime in nature would prohibit somebody
Correct.
From adopting. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about, I just want to say this. It sounds to me that what you do is you bring people along slowly so that by the time you do get to the home study, you know they're ready, so that you're not sort of waiting till the end and giving them this bad evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Actually, I like that. That's very nice to hear. So, okay, so let's talk about now what happens. The baby comes into the family, and again, as a clinical social worker working with people for so long, I have seen there really be some issues around bonding and attachment. One of the clients that come to mind for me is this young woman who I just adored. And she went on to go to social work school. Good for her. But from day one, she could not let her adopted mother hold her and touch her. She couldn't. And I met her mother. I mean, I worked with her over a period of time. And the mother would get in the bathtub with her. Intuitively, she sorted this out. Because when the baby, this young lady, when she was a baby, she could float in the water and mom could hold her in the water. Isn't that the coolest thing you've ever heard?
Yes.
Like, what a smart lady. And this woman was blind, too, the mom. I mean, just really cool people. But attachment, that would have freaked another family out terribly. Maybe even to say, I can't deal with this. This child won't let me pick her up. Where this woman was bound and determined to help her. I think the child probably had fetal alcohol syndrome. I'm not sure, because I think that's a problem. They have a hard time, people with fetal alcohol syndrome, being touched and held and stimulated. Anyway, I'm talking too much and not allowing you to. How do you help with this? How do you help prepare a family for this, for attachment and bonding?
That's a good question. A majority of the preparation is done through the home study. Again, we're going to be doing a lot of training with the families. We talk to them about all possibilities, and we do see a larger number of children with attachment issues who are coming from other countries who may have been institutionalized. So we.
You mean that they were
mm-hmm.
in an orphanage? Okay.
And so we talk to them at great length and ask them how they would handle certain situations. And despite that, sometimes they still may have questions when the child comes home. And we would deal with those accordingly, and we would bring them into the office and talk to them about how to help from a clinical perspective. And if they needed additional help, there are some attachment clinics in the area they could visit to.
Attachment clinics? Oh, could you just speak a little bit about that?
Well, there's
There's a number of them. There's one in Charlottesville, and there is one in Richmond. And it's a way for families to have the child evaluated, have a trained professional monitor and look at how the family interacts with the child, and then give them tips on how to build that relationship with the child. And especially when we look at international adoption and a child coming from an institution, the period of adjustment can be very long, and it can be very difficult on the family because they might have fantasized of what it would be to bring that child home and about having an kind of an instant relationship, and it takes time. The children are coming from places where they may not know the language, they may not be familiar with having a that type of relationship with a person, and it just takes a lot of time. The parents have to be flexible. They have to have realistic expectations of how the child is going to adjust to their family, and it could take several months to a year before that bond between the child to have trust with that parent forms, and then for that attachment and that relationship to form.
And this, is it a team approach where these professionals help? They watch, literally watch how the parents are interacting with the child and literally teach them how to move towards a different bonding state?
Exactly.
That is way cool. Mm-hmm. How long has that been around?
I think the one in Charlottesville has been around at least 10 years, mm-hmm. maybe longer. And the one, is it maybe at VCU mm-hmm. in the Richmond area?
Actually, it would be very helpful if I could get that information. That way I could put it on my mm-hmm. website.
Sure.
And can people use that center, even non-adoption people, just parents in general having trouble with bonding and attachment? Or you don't know?
I would imagine that they would. It would be the same. There would be similar issues. And so you're looking at the symptoms and what's going on based on attachment and bonding. So
right,
although
which
it might have come from a different place, I think it would be the same
right, like
idea.
Any fantasy of how it's going to be. And we all know, because we're all mothers in this room, that our kids did not come out of the chute exactly how mm-hmm. we thought they were going to be. And for you, you had twins. I imagine you were pretty overwhelmed.
Sure.
In a different kind of way. Yes. Oh, okay. So that's very interesting, and I'll get that information. By the way, this is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. Today, we're highlighting the subject of adoption, and we have two lovely women with me today who work for Jewish Family Services here in Richmond, Virginia. Teresa Burchett, she's the adoption coordinator, and Jessica Carthy, she's the adoption social worker. And we were just beginning to talk about bonding and attachment. So we're moving from there. If you'd like to call and ask either Teresa or Jessica a question today, please feel free, 649-9737. So my next thought is all of that stuff we hear in the media, and as we all know, you can't hear a little bit of it, you have to hear a lot. So if one thing goes wrong, we just hear it over and over and over again, and then people just freak out. And okay, so there's that thing where we've heard about the woman who gave her child back to the I believe it was to a Russian orphanage. And clearly, and you said this a second ago, Jessica, where you said that they get these kids and these children might have some very much more severe problems than they had thought that they were going to. And no matter how much you try to help people to see how it might be, getting the child could be overwhelming for them.
Sure.
Do parents ever want to give their children back? Does that happen? Has that happened in your world?
Well, it absolutely happens. And it's that much more important that the family works with social workers who have an understanding about the issues and the stress that the families are under and help them work through that. We have had some families that have had a really tough time. They never necessarily voiced to me that they would like to give the child back, but I'm sure they had their own thoughts about it when they were in really difficult situations with that child. Thankfully, over time, we were all able to work through it. We are pretty proactive after the child has come home. The families are always welcome to come back and talk to the agency. And if we feel that it's beyond our skill or set or ability to help them, we're going to continue to pursue other means for them to get help with their family situation.
So what you're saying again is what you all do is you are proactive in first helping people to understand what it might look like, mm-hmm. giving them resources to manage the things that they were dismayed about or don't feel like they have the skills to do. And then thirdly, you really hang in there with them to
Absolutely.
Get them through the process because it could be hard at first.
And we want yeah. them to be successful, and we want, most importantly, we want the child to have a successful time with their family and mm-hmm. growing up and developing.
Tell me this, do you do only international adoption, or do you do domestic adoption? Tell me what the differences are. Tell me how that looks.
Well, with our work, we primarily focus on domestic adoption, but we complete home studies for families that are pursuing domestic or international. And then they're working with a international placing agency.
So you're like the agency that they contract with.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so is there a big difference between international and national and just domestic adoption?
The home study process itself is in many ways the same, but with international adoption, we would be focusing on having the family be educated on what it might be like to parent a child who's been institutionalized, some of the medical issues that occur with international adoption, some of the roadblocks that they might face with international adoption, such as country changes, country shutting down, and then with domestic adoption.
What do you mean by countries shutting down?
If a country decides that they're no longer going to have adoption open to U.S. parents, or if the United States for some reason finds that they need to close down adoptions with that country.
So somebody could be in the middle of that process.
Correct. Yeah.
That's not fun.
Yeah.
And tell me one more thing, because you just said something else. You said that the needs of children, the medical needs of children who might have been in an institutional mm-hmm. setting, what are some of the medical problems we see with those children?
Well, in utero, they may have had nutritional deficiencies, and then when they were born, again, nutritional deficiencies. In some of the countries, we see a larger number of fetal alcohol issues.
What country?
Russia.
Eastern European
countries.
Russia has the highest rate of alcoholism in mm-hmm. the world, which is interesting. Canada is number two. Isn't that amazing? It's cold up there. You know, you got to do something. But, okay, so finish. So problems nutritionally, which we all know is a big, mm-hmm. a big reason that children are born with birth defects mm-hmm. is related to nutrition. So, and then fetal alcohol syndrome. So what are some of the psychological diseases that we see from these kids?
Some of the children might eventually be diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder if their experience in the institution was to a level where they never received touch, never received any sort of bonding experience with any caregiver.
We see a lot of ADD, ADHD, okay. Which maybe could also be a milder form of seeing of the fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yes. Could you say for the listeners, because they may not all know, what is reactive attachment disorder?
Reactive attachment disorder is, let's see. It can happen with, in adoption, it can happen with a child who stays with his or her biological mother and father. And what happens is they, for whatever reason, they never have an opportunity to bond. We're very familiar with when a baby, when if we're holding our baby or someone else's baby, we love them and we hold them and we rock them. All of those things are extremely important for a child's development. And if they don't get that, then they may experience reactive attachment disorder, which could cause a number of issues with anger and impulse control, acting out.
Yes, I don't think people understand that physical touch and attachment for a baby is literally not something we just do because it feels good, that it literally is imperative for neurological development.
Exactly.
I don't think people understand that. And so what you're saying is, if these kids don't have that, they create some neurology that becomes difficult for them over time. And you call, and that is reactive attachment disorder. It's in reaction to not having that initial bond and attachment.
Exactly. And there have been studies that have shown it happens in utero, too, sometimes.
Oh,
for a mother,
wow,
that hasn't
really
accepted her pregnancy, a child could have the same difficulties.
Wow, I'd like to look at those studies. That's interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Gail Moskowitz, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. We are here today with two wonderful social workers from Jewish Family Services, and we're talking about adoption. So Jessica Carty is here today, and also Teresa Burchett. They are going to be with me again next week for the second half of this conversation about adoption. We're going to get more into the specifics of how to adopt and what the process looks like, how much it costs, how old the babies are, and we're going to talk more about that next week. So I hope you'll tune in again next week to Mental Health Matters as we talk again to Teresa and Jessica, and we have the second half of our program on adoption. For this week, I really appreciate you listening, and I hope you'll tune in again next week at 1 o'clock for Mental Health Matters.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble.